Well, this morning our scripture comes from Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27. It's a familiar story, how Jesus calms the storm. Then he got into the boat and his disciples followed him. Without warning, a furious storm came up on the lake. And we know that lake as the Sea of Galilee. So that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us! We're going to drown!" He replied, "Oh, ye of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed, and they asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him."
This is our second message that we are pulling from Max Lucado's book, Fearless. And we heard a lot of positive comments last week, so I think you're going to enjoy this one equally well. Last week was a call to grace, and this one is a call to courage. We all know the sinking feeling we have at the pit of our stomach when we know that we're down to our last paycheck, perhaps the last few cents of the paycheck that isn't stretching as far as it needs to, or perhaps we're down to the last solution of a problem, and we've tried everything else, and nothing seems to be working. Or simply in any situation, when we feel we have what Max Lucado calls a thimble, only a thimble full of faith. Do you ever feel that? When you feel shaky inside, and you say, "God, I think I only have a thimble full of faith." What he calls thimble-sized, I'm actually brave enough to try that again, thimble-sized faith. What Max Lucado encourages us to do is that instead of panicking, he says this, then it's the time to quarry some courage. I love that phrase. Think of a quarry. Those quarries are deep. That's when we dig deep. We dig deep and we quarry some courage. So regardless of what life throws at us, it could have been the plague of the 1500s, the 1800s, or the 1900s, or it could be the virus we have today. It could be an economic shutdown. It could be a layoff. It could even be terrorism. And if you think of that word, the root word is terror, which is exactly what all of those bring about within us. All of those events cause fear. And you know, if we're fearful of those things, it's also very probable that we are fearful of that undiagnosed mole that we have on our back. We're not sure what that is. We may also be fearful of the COVID-19 test results. We also may be fearful of our health, which may be declining, or possibly even our age. When we look at fear personified, and for the youngsters here in the church this morning, number one, it's so good to see you. Number two, personified means when we take something that isn't human and we make it human. If we were to personify fear, it would look like the bully next door, wouldn't it? The bully that always seems to be up before we are. The bully that when we open the door, that bully is always there. The fact that we try to go somewhere and that bully is always harassing us. You remember the bully at school. When the bully moves in, takes residency, The bully doesn't allow happiness, our best friend, to come in contact with us, or at least not for long. You think about it, happiness and fear do not ever coincide. Fear is unwilling to share our hearts with happiness, Lucado states. And I think that's very insightful. So happiness does what people do when often confronted by fear. It simply complies and it leaves. I mean, how often have you ever seen these two existing coincide? Someone who is in a state of panic and thinking clearly. When have you ever seen someone who is happy and confident and yet simultaneously trembling with fear? When have you ever seen someone cower with dreaded fear of what's going to happen in the future and yet on the same time be generous, merciful, and kind to those they don't know? If we admit it, Max Lucado states, fear has never pulled our country or our family out of poverty. Because when we fear, we take in, we hold on too tightly. Only faith does that. Faith that things will be better, that we can make a difference, that we can be generous in the time of fear. The fear that surrounds us. Now, this morning, we're going to look at the New Testament as an example, and I think you're going to really enjoy this. It's the same passage that Paul read. We're just going to break it apart bit by bit, and I think you'll enjoy this.
In his gospel, Matthew provides four verses only to express a multi-layer lesson on faith versus fear. Within this lesson, Matthew carefully selects his words. In Greek, the original language of the Bible's New Testament versus Hebrew in the Old Testament, Matthew records the storm with the word seismos, which means a quake or trembling eruption of sea and sky. Now, Matthew records a great seismos arose on the lake. This term exists still in our vernacular. A seismograph measures an earthquake's intensity. And a seismologist is a person who studies those charts. This word is used only three times in Matthew's gospel in the New Testament. The first time is the storm. Second, when Calvary shook and the curtain of the temple split at Jesus' death. Matthew states it like this in chapter 27. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn from top to bottom. The earth shook and the rocks split. Then the centurion speaks that famous line, "Surely he was the Son of God." But now the ground shakes yet again. The third time at Jesus' resurrection, when a violent earthquake occurred, and Matthew states in chapter 26 or 28, verse 2, that there was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone, and he sat on it. Now, to compare this storm on the Sea of Galilee to the earth shaking at the time of Jesus' death and Jesus' resurrection, it would have been a powerful storm indeed. A storm that even seasoned fishermen like Peter and John had never witnessed. They all feared for their lives. Yet here is Jesus, He was asleep on the boat. The waves were massive. If you can just imagine, if you ever saw the movie The Perfect Storm, and how this great giant wave came down towards the boat, just think of it like that. The boat, along with the disciples, would have experienced the most vicious roller coaster, much better than King's Island or Cedar Point, but up and down and over and under. It would have been sheer drops, yet Jesus slept. In addition, the winds, crashing waves, along with thunder and lightning would have awakened a dead man. Yet Jesus slept.
Furthermore, the storm was a sudden storm, one that could not be predicted and wasn't predicted, even by the seasoned fishermen, as Peter and John, as Paul pointed out. So the whole fear factor, remember that television show we used to have, the fear factor? The fear factor was at a complete receded all-time high. It raced to an all-time high. Now, we know that Jesus was spiritually attuned to his disciples, to these men. And yet here, in the most perilous time in their lives, Jesus is asleep. Did Jesus not care? Well, obviously, he cared. Yet, the disciples awakened Jesus and they exclaimed to him, "Lord, save us! We're going to drown." Look up any translation you want. That's the way it says it. "Lord, save us! We're going to drown." Now let's freeze that frame just for a second and ask ourselves, when is the last time you have spoken those words to the Lord or confessed those to a loved one? When is the last time something over you loomed so greatly, so powerfully, that it seemed too overwhelming? When is the last time you or a loved one felt like you were drowning? You know, it happens in life. It happens in life. Yet Jesus, when awakened again, does not give the disciples the response they are anticipating. Remember with the feeding of the 5,000, when they said, "We need to feed them," and Jesus says, "You feed them," and he wasn't being facetious. He was just saying, "You can do this. You can do this. You and me combined, we can handle this." So once again, Jesus does not give them the expected results right away. Instead of waving that magic wand and stopping the waves, instead of patching the boat, healing the boat so it would stop cracking apart, I mean, keep in mind, this is Peter and John, seasoned fishermen, who are waking Jesus and say, "You need to save us, and you need to save us now because we are going down." They felt it. Before Jesus even touches nature, he looks at the men, and you can imagine they're probably on this wave that Paul was describing, probably descending 10 feet, and in the midst of this, he's going, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" The key word there is why. Why are you so afraid? These 12 disciples were so shocked by Jesus' words that it's recorded that the disciples said nothing until he calmed the waters. They were shocked to silence, even Peter. Can you imagine? Even Peter. So Jesus rebukes the waves. He calms the sea. And after he does that, they find their wits about them. And they say, "What kind of man is this that even the winds and the waves obey him?" Perhaps part of it is perspective, and we've been working on that word, and I know I've been working on that word for over a year now. The disciples' perspective of who Jesus was, they knew him to be a man. They'd been sleeping with him and eating with him. They knew him to be a man, but they also knew him to be a man of God. And they did, after all, expect him to do something about it, or they wouldn't have bothered to have wakened him up, right? They're saying, Lord, they call him Lord. Lord, you need to save us. So they did expect Jesus to do something about the situation, even if it was going to be nothing else but a closing prayer before they all perished, right? But even in their personal amazement, they say, what kind of man, what kind of human is this? That word never popped out to me until I read this, and I read it and read it again. They, the disciples, had not fully grasped that Jesus was the Son of God, even when they saw him calm the waters.
But Max Lucado, in his book, Fearless, makes an excellent point. As Christ demonstrates how to rest during the storm. After all, we have the same choice. We can panic and believe we're going to die, or we can calmly rest, knowing that God is in charge. Regardless of the seismograph's intensity reading, sometimes we simply have to do what we have to do to survive the storm. Freaking out solves no problems. Picado points out that Christ is giving his disciples and us a not too popular reminder that getting on board with Christ, when we get into his boat, it can mean getting soaked with Christ. All disciples of all ages can expect rough seas and stout winds. Christ's followers, they do get pneumonia. They do get COVID-19. They do at times have to bury their children, battle addictions, and face many fears. But here's the lesson. It's not the absence of storms that set us apart as Christians. It's whom we discover in the storm. An unstirred, an unshakable Christ. In the Gospel of Mark, Mark also records the same storm. It was obviously a doozy of a storm. And he does that in chapter 4. He spends 6 verses on it. And Mark records the disciples as asking Christ, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Again, here is the human characteristic. They weren't thinking about the Son of God. They're thinking of a human. That's what the emphasis there was. They called him teacher. Mark records the same rebuke by Jesus to the winds as well as to the disciples. And only Mark states that once the storms were instantly calmed by Jesus, that the disciples were terrified. They were terrified by this. Whereas in Matthew, the disciples were amazed. Now the disciples are beginning to catch on as to who Jesus really is. And it both amazes and terrifies them. Perhaps it terrifies them because by asking Jesus if he cared about them or not. They are questioning Jesus' character. They don't call upon Jesus' personal strength to upright that boat or his spiritual strength in order to stop the storm. They attack his character. And they said, "Don't you care that we are perishing?"
We're like that oftentimes, aren't we? I mean, just think about your own life. You know, when the situation is right, when the sun is shining, when the sails are moving us in the right direction, what we feel is the right direction, all is good with the world. And it's easy to sing God's praises. We don't question God. We don't question our leaders. We don't question our friends. But let a storm hit. Let something go wrong. And suddenly, other people's, as well as leaders' character, are called to question. You know, what makes the difference? And Max Lucado again brings out that the difference is the factor of fear. That fear, number one, turns us into control freaks. So in the center of a storm or difficulty, which God promises will occur, we have a sense of loss of control. And we look for something or we look for somebody to blame. Something, somebody must be the cause of this. And unfortunately, the more we feel insecure, unfortunately, the meaner our spirit becomes. And we begin attacking the integrity of others. We bare our fangs and we bite. I don't know about you, but I have two grandsons and I know exactly how they operate with one another. And that is it to the T. Get along great. Couldn't have sweeter grandsons. One thing go wrong. You push me a little too hard and the fangs come out. But there's another aspect of fear. And this was a new thought for me, that fear causes us to forget. A lack of recall occurs when we are afraid. So let's take the disciples, for example. Prior to that storm, we know that Jesus had just fed thousands. He had healed hundreds. He had even cast out demons with a singular word. And yet, when the storm arises, they forget all of that. They forget all of that because Jesus isn't reacting the way they expect him to react. Jesus isn't doing what they think Jesus should be doing, right? So they become fearful. They possibly become a little angry and they lash out. Now, somewhere on that boat, surely someone would have said, "Hey, look, we have Jesus's resume. All right, even if we don't have it in ink, we have Jesus's resume. We know how he can feed 5,000. We know how he can heal hundreds. We know how he can cast out demons. Surely we can trust him with this, right?" No, they forget all about that. Surely they could have reminded themselves that Jesus has experience in this area, and surely they could recall that he has close ties with the one who was allowing the storms to swamp the boat. Obviously, fear causes spiritual amnesia.
There's a couple commandments that Jesus gives in the New Testament. One is, love thy neighbor. And that's repeated about 8 times. In stark contrast, Jesus states, "Fear not," over 20 times. You know, as parents, we have numerous commands that we use with our children. Most of them go something like this. Clean your room! You better be home on time. Keep your chin up. Work hard. Do your best. Well, Jesus' most used command was, fear not. In his numerous fear not proclamations, Jesus is calling us to courage. Face the fear and be courageous. And here are a few.
Matthew 10, verse 31.
So don't be afraid. You're worth much more than those sparrows.
John 14, verses 1 and 4.
Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and trust also in me. I will come and get you so that you will always be with me where I am.
And again from John chapter 14, but verse 27.
Don't be troubled or afraid. Now we know that not all fear is harmful. Sometimes our instincts kick in and warn us of upcoming calamity. We have to be mindful of those fears. However, the lesson today is not to allow your fear to lead to hysteria. Hysteria is not from God. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7 states, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear," and sometimes it's written, "a spirit of timidity." Let us leave today less fearful than we have been before, because God is in control.
The verses we sang today as a quartet remind us that when the storm rages, when tribulation or persecution come, when we falter, when we fail, or when we grow weak and weary, we need to rely on God and make the same request, "Dear God, stand by me."